Football is back, and we have you covered each weekday afternoon on OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Some of the best football guests, from Armando Salguero and John McClain to Trey Wallace and Bobby Carpenter, plus the top headlines and reaction to the college football and NFL weekends.
The Chiefs go for dynasty mode with Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid.
They're the favorite, right?
Yeah, they have to be. The AFC goes through Arrowhead, but the Bengals and Jets, they're all in to reach Vegas. And the Bills and Dolphins are also confident. Withrow, what about college football?
Can you say three-peat? That's what they're hoping to say in Athens, Georgia, as the Bulldogs continue their march to college football dominance, while a cast of usual characters led by Michigan, Ohio State, and Bama nip at their heels.
There's plenty of craziness on a week-to-week basis. Pull up to the bar with us each weekday afternoon. We're streaming live 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern across the OutKick Network. Podcasts available everywhere, and always check out OutKick.com.
NFL and college football covering your favorite teams. OutKick's Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
This episode of The Instance is listener-supported. If you'd like to help, you can go over to patreon.com/frogpants today. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of The Instance today. We're pulling up a chair to a table and talking to an old friend, a pal of the show, and someone we admire a lot here at The Instance. It's Russell Brower. Russell, welcome back. It's been too long.
Greetings, programs.
Yes.
It's good to see you all. Not actually seeing you, but meeting you again.
Yeah, we're not doing this live, we should mention. We often, whenever we've done these together, they've always been sort of a little more casual and not with spotlights or anything. And, you know, it's actually kind of a safe way to do a lot of Blizzard interviews, because occasionally somebody in some dev team will say something they're not supposed to and have to go back and edit it. And it's better to not to do that stuff live. So,
yeah, but that's the dev teams. I don't do that.
No,
I always admired how Johnny Carson always said he only stopped tape, I think, twice, maybe.
Wow.
In 30 something years.
That's amazing. Really?
So,
yeah,
that's something to strive for.
It's funny you bring him up. I was just watching with the loss of Don Rickles the other day, who was not really my generation's comedian, but I had a lot of respect for him as my parents' generation comedian. So I was interested, and I started hunting around, and there is a great scene, or there's a great episode of the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where Sinatra's hanging out with Johnny and they're having a regular interview, and out of nowhere Don Rickles comes out of the curtain and interrupts the entire thing and basically just steals the rest of the show.
Yes.
And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's classic.
It's so good.
I passed him once in the hallway at Walt Disney Imagineering. He and his name just flew out of my head. Gilbert Gottfried had just finished doing some shtick, I believe.
Weird.
And I think it was the two of them. Uh-huh. Maybe it was two separate times. And my friends from Disney are going to smack me for getting it wrong. But the point is, he just kind of walked past me, and everyone in the hallway was invisible. So
yeah.
Apparently he couldn't think of anything nasty to say, which that might not be a good thing.
No, I don't know. Who knows? He's an insult comic.
I think you've made it when you've been insulted by him.
That's
so unfortunately.
True. That's true.
I remember more Gilbert Gottfried, because when he was done with this voiceover session, he stood out in the middle of the hallway and he said, "I want to go to Disneyland. Who here will take me to Disneyland?" And one of the interns or something said, "Well, I'll take you to Disneyland." And they went and,
wow. Wait a minute.
Whatever.
An intern took Gilbert Gottfried to Disneyland and just
it was someone fairly new in their job there, and just said, I'll do it. And
that's amazing.
Had the ability to sign in to the park and everything.
So. That's so funny to me.
Demanding, "I want to go to Disneyland."
He's an interesting guy. But speaking of interesting guys, you guys at home and listening are like, "Oh yeah, we know Russell. Everyone knows Russell." But there may be a few of you who don't know that every time you listen to sweeping, majestic, incredible music and sound mixing in the game, you are often seeing the results of Russell's leadership and his team hard at work, and in often cases, actual compositions from Russell himself. And we're big fans of that here. As much as we like to talk about what the game is doing, what Warcraft and all the other games under Blizzard's roof are doing these days and what their patch notes say and what the future of the gameplay looks like, and all that's fun and great, but we are really big fans of the nuance that all of the music brings from you and Akri and everybody else who's involved over there. It's really incredible stuff. And I just wonder, since it's been probably a year and a half or more since we had any kind of interview, I think it's maybe even been 2 years, how do you feel about the state of music right now in the Blizzard universe? And by that, I mean, it really has expanded in the last few years to include so much more than just Warcraft, just Diablo, just StarCraft. It's really gotten out there and created a, I don't know, like a lot more variety. You listen to something, you know, a piece from Overwatch, and you're listening to something very different than a Diablo-themed Heroes of the Storm track, you know, versus something that's happening in Hearthstone. Like, it's just kind of a whole new world in a way. I'm really curious how you feel about all that. It's pretty crazy.
Phew, thank heavens it worked.
Yeah.
we fooled him. No. Well, thank you for mentioning the team. I would be remiss if I didn't start out by saying that... So there's a fabulous group of on-staff composers here. Glenn Stafford, who founded the department, Derek Duke, who's now a project music director, and he actually is, in fact, the music director for Overwatch. Mm-hmm. And Jason Hayes actually recently departed to, you know, go take on some new challenges elsewhere, but he had been with us up till recently, and of course is responsible for many wonderful melodies that most people know or don't know that they wouldn't know that it was who which one of us it is.
Sure, but, sure. Plus, you guys, you end up taking. I mean, so let's say he does a riff, and let's say it's the opening to the World of Warcraft loading screen from Vanilla Days, and you guys then have the responsibility down the road. Of one of you or many of you taking that essence, that essential melody and turning it into something totally thematically new, because the new expansion's all about green magic and, you know, demon hunters and whatever. But you still have to kind of harken back to that.
That's been my particular privilege since I arrived. So I showed up here in June. It'll be 13 years, and we had not quite started the Burning Crusade then. Mm. In fact, I can recall the very first meeting where I probably said this last time, where Chris Metzen told us what the new playable races would be and things like that. I can still picture him and hear his voice. Mm. So when that being the first expansion, we're sort of scratching our heads as to, well, should we do anything to that login music? And I don't think anyone had a real strong opinion either way, but it was understood that what was there was much beloved. And so it had to resonate in similar ways with people. And organically, I came up with a formula, if you will, where with each one, I try and certainly put in that original 7/4 march or 7/8 March that's in the beginning of the Vanilla WoW piece. And then somewhere in there, I get a little bit of the older themes that people remember, mm-hmm. especially if they're ones that had not ever been recorded with a live orchestra before. Right. And that was really easy several years ago on Burning Crusade. I was able to touch on some of Jason's, like the Night Elf music and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then some of the new stuff. So it's sort of something old, something new.
So the old original title, which I don't have handy right here, turned into this for Burning Crusade, which I have a little taste of here at the top here.
Burning Crusade.
So when you hear that, I'm curious. Like, this obviously has this dun, 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 dun thing happening in it that is different than the original theme.
Right.
And it's enough to set. This fascinates me, just from a guy who doesn't know jack about music, except he likes listening to it. But it strikes me as such a subtle change to the original theme, but it absolutely tells you the story that we're heading somewhere specific. Like, it takes you to that next place. And it's easy to say that with, like, Pandaria, or even you know, Wrath of the Lich King, maybe a little, because it's got a very cold up north sort of feel to it, and it's thematic that way. But in the case of Burning Legion, it was like, or the Burning Crusade, it was like this moment of, oh, all right, it's just up a notch, and the stakes are higher, and we're in a new place, and it's much bigger, and there's demons, and somehow that music is reminiscent of that in every way. Is it the combination of visuals and the music, do you think, and it's just in my head that way, or is the music, does it stand alone in your mind as a way of expressing what the next big thing was going to be?
I think the role of the login music, should you not click through it, is for, it's to give you a sense of what journeys you may or will encounter. I think that the people who listen to the whole thing are either first timers who will be rolling a character and spending some time, especially now, there are many more choices to make now than there were in 2007. Mm-hmm. And so the chance of them hearing the whole thing is much higher. So that's good. And then of course there are certain times, whether if it times out and it goes back to there, I've certainly based the length of it on the notion that it shouldn't loop so often that it gets annoying. Mm-hmm. And so if you happen to listen or choose to listen, I want it to take you on a journey and give you a hint of what's to come. And so that fits very well with the formula of showing you where we've been and what the new threat is and things like that. In the case of Burning Crusade, it was the first time it had been redone, and the pressure was certainly, I was just putting on myself, was high. Mm. One thing that's unique about that opening is I purposefully did not look at the score of the original or listen to it for probably a month before I sat down to write it. And so what I did was purely based on my musical memory of what it was, and that sort of merged with what my subconscious was wanting to do to it. Mm. To make it actually kind of the things you said. Mm. I should have you write press release.
Yeah, get me on staff, will you? I'll start getting all that PR out there. But it is. I mean,
can't get any more of you on staff, or else we won't have the instance anymore, and that would be bad.
That's true. You got to quit hiring X instance people. But I really like that idea that these just subtle lifts and changes and shifts in music can make such a big difference. I noticed it also in the Warlords of Draenor opening again, also very reminiscent of Vanilla, but then very quickly takes on this edge, this darker turn, and made it sound like a whole new application of the music without sounding like a whole new application of the music, if that makes sense.
Chris Metzen told me he really wanted Warlords to just sound dangerous, mm-hmm. More so than ever before. So that was definitely inspiration there. Yeah. And there's another debate that happens every single expansion, and that is, should I go into the 7-4 March immediately, mm-hmm. or what? And at this point now, we've done a little of everything. We've gone right into it a couple of times. In the case of Wrath of the Lich King, it's about 40 seconds before it starts.
Yeah, and, in fact, that one, I have it queued up here. This starts out really, I'll start this here, people can hear it. I mean, it's very ominous, it's cold, there's kind of a, you know, the mystery of what's around the corner, something scary is going to happen. Like, definitely that's a different approach than the first two, and even Warlords and others. But what made you decide that was the one to ease into rather than just jump straight in?
Well, part of it was wanting to establish everything you just described of the feeling of it. But the other reason was I had been sort of scanning people's comments, and I of course been playing very avidly, so, and I noticed that sometimes if you had been playing a while, maybe you had your volume kind of cranked or something like that, And if for whatever reason, like especially, heaven forbid, if the connection's lost and it snaps back to the login screen, it could be quite unsettling and not necessarily in a fun way right. when that music just came and slapped you in the face for no reason. plus then there was the roaring dragon and all that. So it just it was a notion of, say, what if I ease into it and then people will sort of not have this really jarring moment for no good reason. I mean,
sure.
It's good to have some drama when there's a purpose, but
yeah.
I think many a person has been in the other login screens have been awakened, you know, finding their head on their desk.
Well,
having nodded off.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, I remember when beta happened for Wrath, or maybe it was just like pre-patch, because they started doing pre-patches to get all the system changes and stuff early so they could, you know, make sure load balancing was okay and all of that before the actual patch day or the actual expansion day. And I remember when the screen changed and I got this snowy vista with chains near me, some sort of guardrail chains, and I'm looking over what turned out to be Ice Crown Citadel, and everything around you was Northrend, and that music eased in the way it did. And I just thought, oh, okay, we are heading to a very different place. This is not the hot, disgusting, sweaty Outlands. This is a new place, a colder place, a dark place. And, you know, we're going to get this Arthas story. And I knew it from that. Like, I didn't need anything else yet. I tried to stay pretty spoiler-free on most of the content. I always do until I played it. Mm-hmm. But I knew from that, from the visual, and I knew from that music and that lead-up that we were going somewhere cold. And that's, I guess, to your credit and your team's credit, this ability to take these, I don't know, these places and package them in a way that we know right from the book's cover what we're getting into.
And that is why we enjoy experimenting with it. And even though that's been a subject of internal debate each time, we haven't gone back and changed it necessarily. I think the only time I was asked to change something was, I believe it was on Cataclysm. Mm-hmm. Actually, it wasn't the login. It was a similar piece of music for a trailer, and I had used a Celeste for its mysterious sounds. And unfortunately, Harry Potter had just come out, and everyone on the team associated that sound with Harry Potter. And to me, I was just playing against the obvious part of what you were going to feel in Cataclysm. Mm-hmm. And I was doing all this, I eventually get into all this rite of springy kind of bombast, but just to sort of bait and switch you, I lightened it up a little bit in the beginning and to me it read as mysterious, but to everyone else it read as magic and Harry Potter.
Interesting. Stuff. Well, here's the top end of that. It's called The Shattering. I want to kind of hear it. Again, a very different introduction compared to the previous expansions.
Yeah, so I did, now that I hear it again, yes, I did pull the Celeste out of the top of that anyway.
That's interesting. I kind of want to hear that version of it, because I think I understand what you're saying, that Harry Potter sound.
It's in there somewhere, I think, or it's certainly in the game somewhere, but it's one of my favorite instruments, so if you don't hear it there, you'll hear it elsewhere.
You hear it someplace else for sure, yeah. That's interesting. Siege of Worlds is interesting because of that being the title track for Warlords. We talked about it a second ago, but there's a tribal quality to this that I really like. I'm just going to play a tad of that. Can you tell me what that thing at the beginning is? Because that is awesome. Like it is it's like there's a horn going off and the horde is coming over the hill and this is it. There's blood in everyone's eyes. Like there's... You really captured the whole gritty nitty,
I think both myself and the cinematics sound team were looking for the ultimate, like, conch horn or you know, steer's horn bellow. And I'm not positive what I wound up using there. It's certainly, I know I spent a lot of time processing it, so it sounded like it was resonating over the from one side of a valley to the other or something like that. And we were actually taking some internal bets as to whether we were going to be asked to remove it because it was really kind of a sound effect. But I predicted it would stay, and it did. And I think it helped set it off. And there's certainly it helped set it apart from the others. And of course, the brass is just for that whole expansion, we more or less doubled up on our brass horsepower.
Oh, interesting.
Firepower, maybe is the better word.
Well, that's definitely, those sounds are tribal, you know, maybe not tribal, but there's like a, I don't know, they're warlike, I guess. And that expansion was all about that. I this is going to be a controversial question, and you can choose to not answer this if you'd like, but I want to know, when there is an expansion and a bunch of content that is primarily Horde themed versus one that is primarily Alliance themed, do you have a preference as to which is the more fun playground to be in when you're making music?
I still don't remember which horn I used on that.
Yeah.
It's, there was something about, wait, what? What did you just
see?
Asking?
I told you it's good. It's going to it's gonna be controversial stuff here because, you know, the Horde v Alliance thing is never going to go away. It's always going to be a bit of a piece of conflict. But I'm biased, but every time I hear you come up with something, you and your team come up with something that's very Horde-centric, I get way into it. And I love that tribal beats,
honestly,
and drums and stuff. And it's just my bag, but I'm guessing there's Alliance people that feel the other way.
Well, absolutely. I honestly try and keep a balance within each of those login pieces too, because I don't want to alienate any players, even playfully, because of course, and that's the only way it would be meant, would be playfully. It's certainly when various people are on stage at BlizzCon and say for the Horde and then for the Alliance, and get the two halves of the audience trying to outdo each other. It's all in fun, and I love that everyone's so passionate about their favorite factions and everything like that. So in the case of Warlords of Draenor, it was really about the story, and the way I changed that one up is the march is the key about that march that Jason wrote, is that it's originally within seven and has been, except for in Warlords I put it in partially in five. Actually, it's I believe the rhythm is in seven and the melody's in five, and it's just disturbing, because if you think of music that's popular that we listen to most of the time, everything is nice and neat, and even if it's a waltz in three, each phrase usually happens an even number of times or something like that, and it's all kind of nice and neat and tidy and safe. And as soon as you start throwing in either odd meters or combinations thereof, where you put five against seven, it takes a while for the number one, beat number one, to line up again. Mm-hmm. It's unsettling to the ear that's been trained by Hollywood and
right,
television and classical music. Even it's lots of old and fun to use devices. Like
sure,
that.
I guess I'm guessing that it's gimmick isn't the right word, but they're things that and actually, you know, it's a lot like when other people make MMOs, they often copy straight up and down what Blizzard has created interface wise, like the way the mouse works, the way the hotkeys and cooldowns work, and all that stuff. And if you don't, you're kind of putting yourself at odds with the player base, and they're not going to feel as comfortable sliding into that. Music's like that, isn't it? If you start doing too many discordant things, unless it makes perfect sense to use them, you're just asking to butt up against people's, the way their brains work, and they're going to feel discordant and not appreciate it for what you were trying to do. I don't know if that makes sense, but do you understand what I mean?
Well, there's definitely an artistic line to walk, I think, where on one hand, yes, there are certain things that just, I think, are part of the universal language of music that has developed in us. And I'm sure many sociologists and musicologists have made entire careers on you know, figuring all this out. I'm sort of the Walt Disney frame of mind, whereas I just do what feels right, and then the eggheads will tell me later what it is that actually happened.
Right.
you know, in terms of like what either is going on mathematically or what you know, what's playing on the subconscious or lizard brain versus mm-hmm. what's popular. Where it comes to the forefront of my thinking is usually in terms of, I think there's a sort of cliche, again, to quote Walt Disney, he said corny is great. It's fine. He loves it. There's nothing wrong with it. But I think what he also implied was that you have to be judicious and tasteful about it. And I think there's a lot of expectation people have of what a World of Warcraft overture is going to be like. Mm-hmm. And so that's one reason the march is always there. Yes, it was traditionally in 7 because that's disturbing. And that's just the sound of the beginning of World of Warcraft. By putting it in 5, I changed it just enough to make the disturbing even more unexpected, yeah. And yet still disturbing.
Yeah, it definitely has that quality. As someone an uneducated listener, I can feel that when I listen to it.
But that's just about as far as I thought it through. There's a real there's a really compelling piece of film on YouTube right now called the Marvel Symphonic Universe. Are you familiar with
it? No, I'm already interested, though. Tell me about it.
Okay. This is not about casting aspersions. There are some amazingly wonderful Marvel films, and I love them as much as everyone else. It's purely a musical experiment that some third party did. Someone went around and pulled some people sort of off the street and said, "Can you hum Star Wars for me?" And to a person, they just all burst into it in various keys, but they all burst into it. No problem. Mm-hmm. You know, can you do Harry Potter? Everyone could do it. They did some non-John Williams stuff as well. And you know, everyone had it down. And then they said, can you sing something from one of these groups of films? Mm-hmm. And they sort of start scratching their head and stuff like that.
You totally can't. It's true.
And then they go on basically a little essay about how there's a couple of phenomenons that have happened. One is just the notion of music just being for films being just kind of safe. And they show how, like, whenever there's tension in the scene, the music gets quiet, except there's a very high-pitched violin note. Mm-hmm. And then they go and they quickly show scenes from about 4 or 5 different films, ostensibly all different stories, they're all different characters, franchises, completely different. But they all have this same thing. And the note is a slightly different note, but it's the same bag. And you start going, oh, man. And then if the scene is lighthearted, there's a certain thing. Or they show an example where the music really didn't add anything to the scene and was really just sort of cluttering things up. They also show a moment where the music was actually pretty well spotted and planned, but they killed it with unnecessary voiceover. And so it's really fun to see this play out and what they then the kicker is they talk about the phenomenon of what we call temp music. And that's when as they're making the film and editing it, the editors along with the directors will take music from films that gives them the feeling they like, and they'll slot it in there. And since nonlinear editing has been created or come into vogue, and it's an essential tool now where everything's done on a computer and you can easily drag and drop bits of film around without using razor blades and glue and right. tape, right. which I do remember. Mm-hmm. it's very easy to do the same thing with the music alongside of it. And since film editing, which is like an amazing art that I know nothing about, but I'm really fascinated by whenever I see an expose on it, or I love hearing Walter Murch, who's also an audio hero of mine, talk about film editing. There's a rhythm to film editing, and there's all sorts of wonderful things. And of course, cutting to a temporary piece of music helps with that. But as is shown in this little film, it also includes a little mini roundtable, and there's Alexander Desplat and Danny Elfman and Michael Dana and some other folks there in the room, and they're all just wow. riffing on things. It's part of a larger discussion, but there was a section where they talk about temp music, and Danny just says, "Oh, it's the bane of my existence." And Alexander Desplat says, "You know, there's always a point where, you know, they've watched this over and over again with a piece of music that, you know, is from another film, and they watch it so many times, the music eventually kind of sticks to it, and they become used to it.
And then all they want is that. So if you change it, you come to it with anything original, they're going to be like, no, wait a minute, this isn't what I wanted, right?
Right. And so then they show a series of examples of how they show a piece of film with the real temp music that was used during the production of it, and then they show the same 30-second clip with the final music in it.
Yeah.
And you start wondering why there aren't lawsuits going on. No, and in fact, in one case, the film studio took out an ad in Variety or The Reporter or something like that, saying we apologize for this.
Oh wow,
that's only happened once. But anyway,
I remember when trailers were like this. Like trailers would come out with like I remember Forrest Gump when it first had a trailer. It came out with the music from the Bruce Lee biopic that was like a year before that. And I remember thinking, well, that's weird. Like, why is this got that awesome, by the way, soundtrack from that Bruce Lee movie? I can't remember the name of the movie. Bruce Lee. Oh, no. Something with the dragon or anyway, whatever.
Enter the Dragon or something.
It was something, but it was like a story biography thing of him and before he died and everything. Anyway, it was a good movie anyway, but the soundtrack's incredible. And they used it for Forrest Gump. And I went, well, that's odd. And as it turns out, Forrest Gump has a really good soundtrack as well. But you seem to see a shift right around the time digital editing came along, and then suddenly none of these trailers have other movies' music in them anymore. They're not always the same music that the film ships with, but there's always, maybe it's this temp stuff you're talking about that we're seeing instead.
Right.
Yeah.
And as it's just a very interesting little essay, about 15 minutes long, and it's quite an eye opener as to what's happened. And the filmmaker does a very good job of saying, you know, he's not blaming the composers. It's more of a function of kind of a rut that the industry has fallen into of being safe and doing what's become expected. So something you said earlier reminded me when you talk about, is it okay to, you know, surprise the listener or something like that. I don't remember exactly what you said, but it triggered this memory of this piece because it is a line that we walk where we want to certainly pull all the right strings and push the right emotional buttons.
Right.
Yet I think life is too short to not do something original when we possibly can. And I'd say for me, my version of that is when I arrived at Blizzard, my job description did not include putting my thumbprint on everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to take this already long. Blizzard had a rich, rich musical legacy and history before I showed up. And so my job was not to brand it my way. My job was to be part of this team that started in familiar ground and continue it, develop it. Remember, we always remember that our audience perceives each of these franchises as a continuum. And I certainly don't want anyone to say, oh, this is about when Russell joined the company. And here's where Jason Hayes went off to pursue other things, that would be terrible. Yeah. I think that, it just should be Warcraft.
Yeah, and you guys feel like joint stewards of this stuff? Like, in other words, you can't take it too far in one direction. You can add your own spin here and there, but it can't really take away from that core. And I guess, how do you know where those borders are? How do you know not to step over one line or another? Is that a collaborative thing, or do you just have an ear for it?
I think it's actually fairly obvious for us, because the answer is to just look for when the development team does something new. So when a new playable race comes along, that was my first opportunity. We created the Blood Elves and the Draenei as new playable races for the Burning Crusade. Right. And Derek Duke did the Draenei music and I did the Blood Elf music. And there we had full license, both of us respectively, to go where Warcraft had not been before. Even if the races had pre-existed, if they just had not been portrayed musically, then that's certainly a great opportunity to do something new. So I tell, when I speak to students and whatnot, I tell them creative collaboration is obviously about checking your ego at the door and things like that, but you don't have to compromise your principles. And if you have that desire to not just be formulaic and sort of add something new and unique to this world, then it's just, you pick your battles. And what's cool at Blizzard is that while Warcraft, for instance, is a continuum, we're always introducing new storylines, or either, if not new characters, then characters who might have been fairly minding their own business for a few years suddenly get thrust into the spotlight. And that's an opportunity to do something fresh and new.
I'll bet. Now there's an elephant in the room. It's an elephant adorned with Asian influences. It's this. It has become my favorite of the soundtracks. I love everything about the Pandaria soundtrack. All of it. Every zone, every encounter, everything that was used in raids, the intro, the login screen, all of it is wonderful. And I'm not sure I appreciated it the way I needed to at the time. It was the current expansion. But in retrospect, it is the one I go back to the most. I love it, and I can't get enough of it. And I'm curious if that was, as I perceive it, the most, the biggest departure from what you guys have as your general template.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And forgive me, dear listeners, if I've told this story before, because I have. when I asked Chris Metzen if he could sum up in a sentence or two what he wanted me to know about Pandaria in order to get started in the right direction on the music, just guiding this particular process.
Yeah.
He said, the artists and the writers and everyone have done a wonderful job of creating a new world within the world. And the architecture, the iconography, the banners, the cost, everything about Pandaria just screamed Pandaria. And there's no contradictions. It's just gorgeous. But he said that he wanted to be sure that people understood we're still in Azeroth and the world of Warcraft. And he felt the music was a good opportunity to do that. So the direction that we came up with was to basically take four specific traditional Chinese instruments and overlay that on a more Western film score style. And it was something that I had first noticed in when I was working for Disney back in the early Epcot days, in the World Showcase. There's the China Pavilion with the Wonders of China 360 film, CircleVision film. Mm-hmm. And So that score was done in probably 1980 or 81. And I sort of pulled that out of my, I did not write that, but I pulled it out of my archives because I collect those things. And I listened to it, and it was exactly that. It was a melding of Western film score style with this Asian overlay. And I guess they figured, you know, at that time when Epcot Center opened, there were not that many people had seen a lot of photography of China, much less a circle vision film flying over the Great Wall and following it all the way to the coast. There's some beautiful landscape that no one in the Western world hardly knew existed there. And it was really moving. And I guess I just subconsciously filed that away. And so, if anyone wants to go fishing around in Google and look for the original, I say original because it was redone within the last few years. And I actually just have to say, I haven't heard it. So I have no idea what it's like, but the original 1982 version of Wonders of China, for me, that was the template. And if I were guilty of doing temp music, that's what I would have plugged in. But what I do is I listen to it and then I put it away and I let it gel for a month or two. Mm. And then usually what I can still remember after that time has passed is just the idea of it, and hopefully not the literal, notes and turns of phrase.
Sure. Well, it's to great effect in that soundtrack. It's incredible.
Thank you. We're real proud of it.
Yeah. I think everything about that expansion deserves a lot of pride. Sometimes it's hard for us as players, especially the hardcore out there, as they're doing it, to appreciate it while it's happening. It's often in retrospect, you look back and go, man, that was really a piece of art, like more than you're usually used to or whatever. And that one really sticks out. And, I don't know. It's to you and your team's credit. I think aesthetically speaking, the artist killed it. Everybody killed it. It was just an incredible expansion.
Well, we all collectively thank you and thank all our players, because it was fun, and I'm glad we did that, because obviously we had just previously torn the world asunder.
Yeah.
And that was fun in its own way, but also quite unsettling for folks. And then after Pandaria, we went right back into the hardcore conflict.
Yeah.
The traditional age old.
And not only that, conflict. But you took it to a place that was untouched by that conflict previously. And so there was a real sense of, it really came through for me, the sense of violation, the sense of, boy, as much as you two factions think this is just about you and yours, you're now affecting an otherwise unblemished place. And that, I don't know, that really got with me for whatever reason, struck with me, and still does.
I think that in the past, there's oftentimes, and it happened again in Legion, where the two factions have to face up to the fact that they have a common enemy.
Yeah.
And, but in Warlords, I think one of the parts that made it so special is that we got into character development in a bigger way than we had to date. And of course, I think we're just getting better and better at that, and more interested and compelled to go there. It's who's the war chief.
Right, right.
Who's leading the alliance? And, you know, why are they, what's all the intrigue with, changing war chiefs? And It's actually some of the oldest stories ever told, but in this universe, it's especially compelling.
I agree. The personal approach to characters, even those who are in in-game cutscenes that you run into during a quest line or whatever, there is definitely, I sense an uptick in that. And that, of course, is, blanketed in music. None of those experiences are told in a vacuum or without some sort of soundtrack. And I wonder, has that work of creating smaller vignettes and the little bits, has that increased over time as well?
I think so. I think we're certainly scoring more for characters and situations than we ever had before. I think in 2004, it was almost 100% zone-based music. So Stormwind sounds like this. And yes, it is the soundtrack to the Alliance, but it's also a very specific location. And, you know, Elwynn Forest sounds like this. Anyway, there's just all these really varied locations in the world. To date, no one had played in an open world so large. Mm-hmm. And so the music really helped make the mood of each area sink in. And I'm really thrilled with that. And that was the blueprint laid by Glenn and Jason and Derek and Tracy Bush. And I'm going to forget somebody, so forgive me out there. I wasn't here that. I wasn't here yet, but it was wonderful, and that's how it started. So we, with each expansion, yes, there's new acreage and new zones, but I love that with the Burning Legion, we had the Legion to contend with. And then, of course, by the most recent expansion, which bears the actual name Legion, Gary Plattner actually walked into my office. His name should be familiar to the hardcore Blizzard fans. He's just one of the most amazing artists I've ever met, creating content, especially content that makes the world of Azeroth and everywhere else just look so like you just want to be there. And he walked into my office one day early on, right after when we just did beginning to start on Legion. And he said, I just have an idea. The Legion ought to have a little theme, a little motif, something that you would always be able to tell that either the Legion was responsible for what you're seeing lying in ruins in front of you, yeah. Or that they're coming, yeah. Or that they're there. It should always be sort of a signature. And it was simple and brilliant, and he's totally responsible for us doing that. And again, even in Burning Crusade, even though the Legion's present, we really had not gone there. We sort of spent our melody points, if you will, on the new playable races and stuff. Sure. And the Legion was just sort of a lot of musical bombast, but it began to have an identity as the new expansion Legion came into being. And now as we make our way through the patches, the Legion gets a lot more personal.
For sure. I every time Illidan, I feel incredibly blessed, by the way, to associate as a friend with Chris Metzen, who created the character of Illidan. I feel blessed to know you, who's contributed so much musically to who Illidan is as a character. And I know Liam O'Brien, the voice of Illidan. I feel like Illidan is like a real dude. But in this expansion, more than ever, there's that one part of the theme that's that thing that is just right. Always recognizable, immediately invokes, Demon Hunters, Illidan, there's the Demon Lord someplace. Like you immediately are taken to a place that is his domain. And it's incredible. I love that.
And that little 5-note phrase, that's a Jason Hayes theme that originally was, I believe it first was appeared as a fanfare to kick some piece of music off early on. And it's going to, again, I wasn't there at the time, but it was more of an intro for the entire piece that it went with. And it wasn't necessarily about any one character. And it was in Burning Crusade that we just as a group decided that would be Illidan's motif. Yeah. And so yes, it's we quote it and it has become synonymous with him. And he's so complicated.
Oh man.
I mean that character.
Yep. Everything about
it's
him.
Really hard to tell what side he's on.
Yeah, when I first Burning Legion era, I wasn't so sure. Warcraft 3 kind of wasn't so sure he was my guy or not, but I really like him now. He's so fleshed out and so interesting. to watch. Now, speaking of that and those who create these characters, I have to kind of round us down with a big question. You've said on this very show and other places I've heard you say it that in a lot of ways, Chris Metzen was your muse. And a meeting with him to gain inspiration, to find the notes, to look for theme would often occur with you both in a room. And now that he's not there, he's deep in retirement, raising a new baby off, you know, painting figurines from his Warhammer 40K collection. How has that been? Do you miss that influence? Do you miss having him around? It seems like an obvious yes, but I'm really curious about your feelings about it.
Well, of course I miss him. And we're in touch, obviously. We're friends, and but I do miss having him around here day to day. And you know, one thing, we've gotten so big, and there's so many things going on. And he had actually spent a whole lot of time lending a big hand to making Overwatch what it is, and so. I had not worked as closely with him as, say, Derek had for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's really cool about Chris's legacy is that he would probably deny that he did any of this, you know, deliberately, because he's so self-effacing and just makes it almost sound easy. But I know he's so passionate about this stuff and lives and breathes it. And I think what he taught me, certainly, and I think pretty much all of us, is he taught us more a way of thinking. So we're, you know, a way of approaching a story problem or a story opportunity, maybe, and things like that. So we're not sitting around going, what would Chris do? We're trying to just sort of resonate with that vibe we had when he was around us. And so it's you know, try and think in with a similar sort of approach to a story challenge or something like that. Or, you know, we ask ourselves, this is just random, but we could ask ourselves, well, we could tell this story three different ways. We could tell it with words, we could tell it with a whole lot of pictures, we could tell it with music. And there's no one right answer to that. And, but I believe he sort of instilled in us a, just kind of an artistic sensibility and value system. And it certainly was not very all that different from what I grew up admiring and the likes of Walt Disney and George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and people like that. I believe that, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, one person may be like sort of that energy cell that kicks it off, but they're, you know, they're surrounding themselves with talented folks, and it leaves an imprint.
Oh, sure. So, yeah. He left a mark on everybody, but in particular, those he worked closest with. You were certainly one of those.
I miss him. And if I had never met him, things would be very different. But having met him and got to know him and end up, you know, considering him like the brother I never had, I think it's made me a better musician and team player, and certainly has it's a part of Blizzard's DNA. So
yeah, well, one of the great moments of my life was having the both of you at Nerdtacular 2015. It's now been 2 years since that occurred, and people, if you're coming, you might get to see Russell again this year. He's you're planning on being there, right? We're gonna have you there.
I am planning on being there, yes.
Yeah, it's a grand tradition.
Don't give my room a ring.
Yeah, we're hanging on to it for dear life until until there anything else changes. But yeah, you'll get a chance to see Russell, have him sign a CD or something. You're always a really gracious guest at that event. And
well, it's a privilege to, I have to say, both BlizzCon and Nerdtacular, and even also the concerts, like the video games live concerts and stuff like that. I honestly so much love being there because we sit in our little rooms and do our work and we wonder if anyone's paying attention, and it can get really lonely. So it's, it's so good to meet folks and feel like these are old friends that I just hadn't happened to meet yet. And of course, at past Nerd Tacklers and whatnot, I've made some incredible, like, lifelong friends and even a couple of people such as yourself who are really significant in my life. So I'm very grateful for this whole continuum and universe and ecosystem and
it is kind of all of this. It's the greatest thing ever, really. I mean, honestly, it's pretty neat. And I don't know, so much of it is so many little parts, right? And you've got a really interesting part in this, and you know, we have some role in this, and certainly Blizzard as a whole has a role, and the fans have a role, and there's nothing like it. Like, I don't know of any other community that has that kind of connectivity. And Blizzard is in large part responsible for it, and good people that work there, have a lot of that as well. And that's definitely you, Russell. It's always a pleasure to have you on here, and I'm really looking forward to whatever's next. Like, always interested. Every time, one of my favorite things, I have to admit, just from an outsider looking in on the music stuff, I love the thematic treatments of the Heroes of the Storm theme that keep coming out of that team. And I'm not sure who you've got on there, who's on that right now.
Glenn Stafford.
Is that Glenn? Okay. I love that stuff. Like, one of my favorite arrangements in Blizzard history is probably the Diablo Heroes of the Storm treatment. I love that so much. And I listen to it all the time. And every time a new hero comes out, I'm like, ooh, another chance for those guys to blow me away with some kind of musical arrangement of this now venerable theme. And I just love that. That must be so much fun, or a lot of work. I don't know, or maybe both.
You know what I think you should do? I think you should plan on talking to Glenn. Mm-hmm. I think everyone who enjoys the instance would be absolutely floored by, you know, getting a chance to hear what he has to say about his philosophies and everything. I mean, you think about some of the things he's written, just even in my time here, like Storm Peaks is one of my most favorite treasured things that he's done, and it's so amazingly musical. So I think you ought to interview him and make sure that he's sitting at a piano or has one nearby, because he's a darn good player, and I dare say he might be able to sort of have a little fun with that.
Oh, that could too. Be fun. Yeah. I'm okay. All right. I'm taking up the challenge, and I'm gonna go for it.
Absolutely.
Anything else coming up that you want to mention to people before we go? You got any stuff people should be watching out for?
Well, I look forward to seeing you all, and I will say this: I have to change hats, and I have to say what I'm about to say, and because it's a separate thing. So I'll be very brief about it. But I'm working on a personal solo project of,
ooh,
you know, like a solo album of music.
Really? And, that's so exciting. I'm freaking out over here. When is this?
That's all I can really say, because, you know, this is, but maybe at Nerdtacular I can talk a little more, but it's a completely separate thing, and I need to keep them separate. So
that's really exciting, though. That's
I'll have
so
to
cool.
Ask for forgiveness later. I just, but that's what's new. Just factually speaking, that's what's new. I took a little time off recently, a little sabbatical to clear my head. I didn't want to retire like Metzen. Well, maybe a little bit, just because that sounds like fun. That
sure.
You know, have a new kid and just be a dad. Wait, yeah. Be careful what I wish for.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. You might get a letter in the mail you're not expecting or something.
But I did take some downtime, and I just started letting the creative juices flow. And I'll tell you one thing I did. I treated myself. It was actually in February before I came back to work. I treated myself on my own dime up spent six nights up at Skywalker Ranch, and I stayed in the Gershwin room at the inn. You know, each room in the inn is themed. I don't know if you're aware of that, but like if you're staying in the Norman Rockwell room, each room being named after some artist or musician or
I had no idea. No,
that's director. There's an Orson Welles room. If you're staying in the Norman Rockwell room, you'll look at this Norman Rockwell, you know, print on the wall and just be going, man, that's wait, that's not a print. Holy cow. You know, it's like there's a real. And
wow.
So it's not Gershwin's piano. That was a little probably beyond the possibility. But there's a Busendorfer piano in the room. And, you know, and there's a nice place to sleep and there's a kitchen and there's this piano and you're on the ranch. And in February, it was pouring rain. So it was just really beautiful. In fact, I made some audio recordings of the rain. It sounded so gorgeous outside. And so for like 7 days, I just played and wrote and played and wrote. And there you have it. So.
Wow.
I hope to.
That's really cool. I assume
you know, when I'm wearing my civilian hat just for one mode of relating news, I'll be able to hopefully to share more of that.
Yeah, I'm really curious about how that goes. This reminds me. It's funny. I'm having all these memories of when Chris would have a cool side project, like when he worked on his comic book work for IDW, or when he put out that kids book. I was really excited then, and now I'm super excited. Music from Russell is a good thing, no matter where it's coming from. So more on that as you know it. And, of course, continue to enjoy him and his fine team's work all over the world of Warcraft and various games under the Blizzard umbrella. Russell, it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. And to all the Instance listeners, I just am so fortunate. I adore you all, and I hope I get to meet every one of you eventually.